So, speaking of baseball, joining us down the Maple Toyota Hotline is our Major League Baseball and Blue Jays analyst, Steve Phillips. Steve, thanks for talking to us.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
So, what are you seeing, Steve, when you watch the Toronto Blue Jays this last week and a half?
Oh, I'm excited. I mean, I think that they are really a fun watch because you hang on every at bat, right? You think that every next pitch damage could be done, and that's a really fun offense to watch. And between Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, Kevin Biggio, and obviously Gurriel dinged up a little bit right now, but he'll be back at some point. They're a really fun team, and you can start to see the makings of the core four. I love that Jansen had a good offensive day and that he's starting to maybe come around a little bit, and I think he's better than what he's performed so far this year. And so I think they're really fun, exciting, and you can start to dream about what this team could be like a couple years down the road.
So, Steve, take us a couple years down the road and do the job that you used to do as a GM and kind of be Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro right now. And I know they've taken some heat by what happened, and especially I don't even want to say rebuild. Well, I guess essentially it is a rebuild or reload, and especially after what happened in 2015 and 16, what do you think your path would be right now? Saying they gave you the job and they said, "Here, go to it. You have all these young kids. How soon can these young kids take you to the next level?"
Yeah, I think that my goal would be playoffs in 2022. With the hope that it might happen a year early. We see a lot of these teams where things start to turn a year before maybe, then they really think they're ready. It's not going to be next year. And what they have to do is they have to, you know, they've got a core of young guys. They've got the top of the order sort of that they're building. They're going to have to fill with complementary players around them. They obviously have to go find some pitchers. And, you know, they're trying to find guys where they can through waivers and that sort of thing. Hope that Pearson is ready to go and ready to be sort of an impact pitcher in 2020 to get some time, 2021 to sort of progress, and 2022 to be a leader of a staff. Hope to build around him in that rotation with some others. You've got to sort of target certain players that'll be part of the next 5-year run, and you might have to get them a year early rather than waiting for the perfect guy in the perfect time, because that guy has a choice too. He might say no. So you've got to start targeting some of those other players to go with this core. But you know, I would think that you know, the idea of being a real playoff team in 2022 is reasonable. But, you know, they're going to have to go through this process to continue to grow and develop the players they have and add to some pitchers and complementary players around them.
So, Steve, you had a really interesting point to make on Twitter 4 days ago. And I'm going to read what you said. Did you know that the last three World Series champions combined had 33 pitchers who appeared in the series and only three of them were homegrown? This reinforces that rebuilding teams should draft and develop position players and find pitching where they can along the way. And that kind of debunks, Steve, the common notion that, you know, especially here in Toronto, well, it's great they got all these young guys. Where are they going to find pitching? It turns out you tend to find pitching somewhere else.
No, yeah, you can find it anywhere. I mean, you find it in free agency. I mean, you think back to the Cubs. You know, the Cubs signed John Lester as a free agent. They traded for Kyle Hendricks in a lesser deal. And they ended up, making a deal for Jake Arrieta, and he turned into something better than he was when he was with Baltimore. You look at the Yankees this year. Domingo Herman's a former Marlin. He came from the Marlins organization. He wasn't a Yankee guy, and he's been a big part of their team this year. Paxton's from outside the organization. Tanaka was a free agent signing. Jay Happ, obviously a free agent signing. You look at, the Braves have a lot of homegrown pitchers for sure. The Dodgers have Kershaw and Buehler, who are kind of their lead guys, but Ryu's obviously a free agent from outside the organization. The Astros, who many argue are the best team in baseball right now, Verlander's from the Tigers, Cole's from the Pirates, Miley's sort of bounced around to multiple teams that are out there. Sanchez obviously came from Toronto, so you start looking at, you know, the depth of pitching that's out there right now, and you can find pitching. A guy who showed flashes somewhere but then ran into some struggles, target that guy, because when he had some level of success, you know that it's in there. That's what scouts will say, is I know it's in there because I saw it before. We got to figure out how to get it out. And we all think we're smarter than the next guy, that we're going to make the pitcher back to recreate what he once was. But the reality is it can happen. And so I think that you're going to see a guy, 3 years down the road, a Jameson Taillon from the Pittsburgh Pirates is going to be a free agent. Someone's going to sign him. He's going to blossom and become a front end of the pitcher, which is what Pittsburgh thought, but he never was able to do it. You're going to find some of those options out there, and that's how you build it. But it's much more difficult trading for everyday impact position players. Teams don't want to give those guys up. You can find mistakes made in the pitching market and go out and get them, and they can turn into be solid impact pitchers for your team.
So your impact position players, if you can actually germinate them and have them in your system like the Blue Jays do with these kids in the infield, and I don't know if it's unprecedented, you know, seeing what these kids through the infield have done, I think my DNA has helped quite considerably. But, you know, you've been around the game for a long time. Can you compare this group of, you know, Guerrero and Biggio and Bichette and Gurriel and the rest, but mostly that infield, to anything else that you've seen through the years? And how can they avoid the pitfalls of still being young players and they're going to make mistakes?
Yeah, I think you know, look at the Houston Astros, Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, Alex Bregman. Then they had Springer in the outfield. And then they, you know, and you look at the Kansas City Royals a few years ago, where they had Moustakas and Hosmer and Kane and Salvador Perez as sort of their core four, and Alcides Escobar at shortstop. And so, you know, here's the thing. I don't mind that they make mistakes. Because what they know and what they've shown throughout their minor league careers, and I think that the pedigree that they have is the ability to make adjustments, right? When you do make a mistake, what happens next? When you do fail, because this is a game inherent in failure, and 7 out of 10 times you're still good if you fail that way, is how do you handle that? That's the advantage of being the son of a former big leaguer really has, is that you deal with success and you deal with failure, and you've seen others do it. And you've been around it. You've been in clubhouses. You saw your dad go through it. And I think that that's really the thing. And that's what, you know, you're seeing right now with Vladimir Guerrero make adjustments. Bo Bichette is really good at make adjustments. I went on SportsCenter tonight and sort of broke down the mental approach of Bo Bichette. And, you know, he does something that not a lot of hitters can do, but the best hitters do. And his approach, you know, a lot of guys say, I can't cover both sides of the plate. I have to choose. I can either cover the outside or the inside, but I can't really cover both. He actually has shown the ability to do that because he is so quick inside. Like, he can get to that inside pitch. His natural instinct is to come back and hit that. He doesn't have to cheat to cover the inside part of the plate. So he starts out the at-bat focusing on, let me look for a fastball away. By the way, he's hitting 583 against fastballs. Wow. So far, Bichette. Wow. 583 on the fastball. He looks for the fastball away, then he adjusts to velocity and location in. And if they throw him an off-speed pitch, he's really good at keeping his hands back, where he's been able to sort of still stay back and punch the ball into the outfield, still able to drive it. And if they do dare to throw it inside, he'll just turn on it and crush it down the line or off the wall. And so you're seeing these guys make some of the adjustments here early on. We saw the Bichette or the Guerrero at bat against Chapman, 13 pitch bat. That was that to me was, I know he grounded out into a double play.
That was theater.
That was theater, and he learned, and he showed. I mean, for a rookie to handle that at bat, where Chapman walked away saying, "I threw everything at him, but the kitchen sink and nothing." He said nothing. I couldn't nothing. Romine at the end of the game, after going through. Bichette, by the way, got a hit after the Guerrero right. at bat. Biggio struck out, but Romine, the catcher, walked out to the mound and looked at Chapman like, "Holy crap." What did we just have to go through? And these kids are babies right now. They're going to keep getting better. It's really exciting to watch them play.
You know, Steve, Arnaldus Chapman's, his selection of pitches, everything, it just seemed to me like here's a guy who just dominates guys, just blows balls by them. And it was almost like he didn't even have an answer for Vladimir Guerrero.
Yeah, I mean, what the great pitchers do is they can make good hitters look bad. And Chapman's one of those guys. Mm-hmm. And what Guerrero did, he swung at the first two pitches 100 miles per hour up in the zone, a little bit out of the zone, but he was trying to go big fly. He was trying to hit out of the ballpark. Then he knuckled down. And the ability, after he fouls off sliders and fastballs in and fastballs away, to take a 101-mile-per-hour fastball up and away in the zone and not chase it, and to calmly take it, knowing that it's a ball. 21-year-old kids, they don't know how to do that. Like, he's doing stuff that's not normal. That's not what normal kids do. They would have, his dad, Vlad Sr., struck out against Chapman on 5 pitches back in 2011. You know, Junior lasted 13 and battled, and I think the next time he's gonna be able to do some damage. He'll have learned from it. He'll be able to sort of document in his brain what happened and be able to sort of use that the next time around to make an adjustment.
Steve, before we let you go, I got to ask you about the Orioles and the Yankees. Have you ever seen anything like what's happening? Gleyber Torres with 13 home runs, this season against the Orioles?
Not never. I mean, here it is. It's, you know, the only guy who's done more, I guess, is Lou Gehrig. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, had 14 home runs against the team in a season. You know, I mentioned this note. How about Gleyber Torres? He and Mike Schmidt's the last guy to do this in 1983 against the Expos, and now Gleyber Torres. Home runs at both ends of a doubleheader twice in the same season against the same team. And the idea that Brandon Hyde, you want to talk about being hot or owning another team. Runners on first and second, two right. outs yesterday.
In the eighth, yeah.
And the eighth inning, and they intentionally walk him. it wasn't first base was open, third base was open, yeah. and they walked him. Like, that's Barry Bonds sort of treatment, which is so unique. And to think about the domination, like, Torres has owned him, right? You know, so he's their daddy. Back to, you know, in Pedro Martinez's sort of verbiage, he's the Orioles' daddy. But the Yankees this year are 15-2 against Baltimore on the season. They've hit 59 home runs as a team against them so far. In 17 games, they've hit 59 home runs. It is an owning like I've never seen ever before.
Do you know who knows those numbers really well? Gary Thorne,
who, by the way, is just such a buddy. Gary Thorne and I.
We had him on just a few minutes ago.
Oh, he's the best. Like, so I broadcast games with him. He used to do Mets games. Then I did ESPN games with him. Then he and I sat in a booth to make calls for MLB 2K video games for over 200 hours. We sat next to each other in a booth.
I played them. You guys were good on those games, by the way.
Here's the thing, is that in those games, you call every potential scenario that could ever happen, right? You've got to have a call for it, including those ones that are sort of the extreme video game things where, you know, bases loaded, triple steal, or maybe just say a guy hitting 13 home runs in 16 games against a team. You have to have some commentary for that. And so the extreme, we never did it for a guy that would be that hot against anybody else. That tells you how extraordinary it is. Not even video game documents, the sort of commentary just like that.
Steve, it really is something. We'll see what happens tonight. Thanks for talking to us.
Okay, my pleasure, guys. Thanks.
That's Steve Phillips, our Major League Baseball Blue Jays analyst.
Do you think they throw the
hang on.
Him later?
Wait.
We're going to throw him.
Wait.
I'm telling you.
Wait. Steve, join us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Are you leasing a Toyota? You could qualify for a brand new Toyota at no extra cost during Maple Toyota's lease renewal event. Visit mapletoyota.com/lease.